The Free Congregation of Sauk County is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and a welcoming congregation. That means our invitation is to all, and that all are welcome here, regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, or political persuasion. You're welcome. When we put out the newsletter, I invited you all to bring a memento honoring something that brings you hope. Hope is a bit like love. It's a word we use to mean a whole lot of different things. Sure hope it doesn't rain. I hope we win the Super Bowl. I hope Illinois discovers how much money there is in tickets for drivers who don't understand a passing lane. It's not the kind of hope we're talking about today. When I say hope, I mean Star Wars hope. I mean looking over a bleak reality past long odds and noticing the flickering candle of opportunity. Hope is dedicating yourself to a future you may never see. Hope is reaching the end with a smile because even though you didn't get there is still out there. I could use some hope today. Everywhere I look, I see anger and fear, some of it justified, some of it entirely manufactured. We are a divided nation living beyond our means. We're caught in cultural systems so dysfunctional and entrenched that a rising minority of our children no longer want to have children of their own. Why bring a kid into this? And even if you wanted to, how could you afford it? We could use a little hope. When COVID hit, my hope was a little show called Some Good News by John Krasinski. You remember this show? I see a lot of smiles. Within 8 weeks, that 8-episode show drew over 72 million views with 2.58 million subscribers. When Katrina hit, all the news that wanted to talk about was terror in the Superdome. But when federal help was not to be found, and the cops were setting up barriers at the bridge to keep people trapped in the city, there were Cajuns in flatboats. There were street thugs stealing school buses so that they could clear out their neighborhoods. When 9/11 hit, it was boots walking up the stairs while shoes ran down. It was let's roll. It was exhausted rescue workers and their four-legged helpers going back on bandaged feet for one more. Again and again, when tragedy strikes, communities rally. We did not survive this long by going it alone. Which is about where I would have ended this talk if I'd written it a decade or two ago. Everybody pulled together. Don't give up. We'll get there someday. But I'm a decade or two older now, and I've come to understand that how the story ends depends greatly on where you put the period. When COVID hit, we really did pull together until we fell apart. It's been almost 20 years since Katrina, but it's only been 10 years since the mayor that ordered those barricades built retired to standing ovations. We really did honor our first responders at 9/11 until they started getting cancer, and then it was a budget issue. When I say hope, I'm not talking blind optimism. I'm talking about seeing what is and refusing to sink into selfishness or cynicism or despair. Some days it's not easy. Val's youngest lost one of his very best friends last week. We honestly don't know exactly why. But the kid who survived the holdup said that Jaden shoved him down and covered him with his own body. The doctors couldn't repair the damage. Jaden was inspiring and handsome, full of talent and drive. He slept under our roof, he ate at our table, and now he's gone. When I say hope is critical, I am being as practical as I can be. Look how far we've come. With the possible exception of Antarctica, every single continent on this planet is stained with the blood of human sacrifice. Appeasing gods that we now understand never really existed. The foundations of far too many cities are dusted with the ashes of witches. I'm sorry, did I say witches? I meant uppity women. Because it turns out there never really were witches, and spells don't really work either. For most of history, slavery wasn't a sin. The Bible gives instructions on how to do it properly. Only it turns out there never were subspecies. They were just as fake as witches and Thor. I grew up with friends. I knew personally friends who were terrified to be honest about who they were because they knew their friends and their family and their schoolmates would punish them for it. I remember the day gay marriage became legal. You want to know how far we've come? Last week, the Associated Press estimates 200 million people gathered to watch that eclipse. 200 million people. And in those 4 minutes, there were no Republicans, there were no Democrats. There were just human beings standing awestruck in a moment, shouting and dancing and laughing, and little kids running around screaming, "This is amazing! This is amazing!" You want to know how far we've come? Christopher Columbus saw an eclipse too. Lunar, not solar, the kind that turns the moon red. It was 1504, and he was stranded in Jamaica during his fourth voyage to the West after his crew mutinied on account he's such a great leader. They were starving. The natives knew it. So they made like an Illinois gas station and they raised their prices. Christopher was a God-fearing capitalist, so he recognized a free market solution, paid fair market value, thanked them, and went home. Right? He told the natives Jesus was furious and Jesus was going to turn their moon to blood. So you don't believe me? Come watch. So they show up and they watch with dawning terror as the moon turns red. And he says, "There might still be hope. Let me go pray." He goes and prays in his ship while they run to gather all the food they can find and drop it at his feet. And when the book says that the eclipse is just about to end, he walks out of his cabin, says, "Good news, God has given you a stay of execution because I asked politely. It's a good thing I'm here to protect you. For now, keep that food coming or else." So how do we know this story? Because his son wrote it in his autobiography. And he didn't call it fraud or genocide or slavery. He called it shrewd. He was proud. And he knew that everyone who read the book would be proud too. They commissioned paintings. You can still see them. That's how far we've come. That stuff, that used to be normal. Every inch of the path that we walk was blazed and cut and paved by people who saw the world as it really was and imagined it could be better. And every second of their work was opposed by people who were utterly convinced they were idiots. You think progress only marches one way? Google fashion in Iran, 1977. Try to say that twice. Try to tell me progress doesn't move backwards, given the chance. Some people have no hope. They are trapped in a zero-sum game of claw and tooth. As far as they can see, all of our high-minded ideals are at best naive and more likely a con, which means they're already planning. They think about inequality and justice the way we think about Mondays. Like, yeah, it sucks, but what are you going to do? So they're already strategizing. So if all you've got is hope and they've got a plan, you got a problem. Ever notice how autocrats and their alt-right followers can't handle artists and musicians and poets and comedians? If your worldview is built on hopelessness, the hope givers are both confusing and dangerous. If your power is built on fear, the unafraid must be silenced or controlled. Hope isn't just a motivation or a goal, it's a tool for the journey. Our strategy is not preemptive violence that just confirms all their assumptions and settles us into more war. Our strategy is not cutting words that just drives them further into their own camp and creates more war. Our strategy is intentional, unashamed, defiant hope lived right in their stupid, smug little faces. It means seeing the world first as it is, and then as it could be, and refusing to settle. Don't make a threat. Be a threat. Don't make an argument. Be one. Be hope that cannot be denied. Thank you. So, Chelsea, just to respond to those two, there's a website online that talks about, I think, 7 or 8 different parameters that are like the livability of our planet. You know, like biodiversity is a parameter and CO2 is a parameter. There's all these different parameters, and we're like living outside the sustainability code on like 7 of them. But I did hear a story, an example of the little stories. I heard this just literally yesterday. There were two friends who were both different kinds of scientists and historians, and they were reading an old English text who was by a guy, he was called the Bald. And it was like Bald's Leechcraft, I think was the name of the book. It's a middle-aged book. So he was a doctor, and they went through to try and find like clearly they had infections. Like, how did they fight infections in the olden days? And he actually had a recipe, and the recipe said, this is the best medicine. And I couldn't find a copper coin, but it was real copper and wine from a certain area and a few other ingredients, and it was all mixed together into a brew, and they dropped it on Staphylococcus aureus, and it murdered it. They're like, you're kidding me? So they pulled out MRSA, which is like medically resistant, like it's nasty. It murdered it. They're like, what happened? The best that they can figure is someone back in the day, this bald dude, like invented the best medicine. Everybody started using it. The bugs of the day got resistant to it. Everybody stopped using it. And then we discovered penicillin and everybody started using it. Now we're resistant to penicillin, but guess what? The old thing works now. So if we, here's the hope. If you can, that was one culture in one little corner of the world. We got how many more? If we could dig through all the medical texts from all these different places, we could collect 40 different answers and rotate through them so that by the time we get back to the beginning, the first one's usable again. Like, there are options, there are opportunities. There are no solutions, but there are opportunities, and that keeps me going. Absolutely. So I have an exercise for that. If you're interested in participating, close your eyes right now. Wow, I caught like 50% of y'all. Nice. All right. Okay. Now in your head, imagine the room that you've been sitting in for something like an hour now. Most of you have been here 100 times. You're very familiar with this room. Based on the image in your head, I would invite you, without opening your eyes, to point your finger in the direction of something pink. Go ahead. Okay. I'll give you 10 seconds. Everybody, you got your finger pointed where you think there's some pink? All right, open your eyes and see if you were correct. Were you able to find some pink? Okay, look around the room and see how much pink there is in this room. Are you surprised at how much pink there is in this room? Did pink suddenly manifest in this room, or was it here all along? So if this, from here to here, if from here to here is the visual input we receive from the world, this is how much we're aware of. Our brains are filters. And they are absolutely influenced and set by previous experience. So if you have trained yourself, if you had, suppose pink was your favorite color, and every time you came in this room, you're like, pink, 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 pink. It would have been so easy for you because you would have been primed for that opportunity. Your filter would have been set to see the billion pinks that are here. But most of us, that's not true. So we see the thing that we expect to see, and we filter out all the rest. So the opportunity, are they stuck? Yes, absolutely, they're stuck. Is it lethal? It could potentially be. Is it unfixable? I don't think so. Because all it is going from here to here. It's just that much of a shift. The data is all there. How we see it is determined by our past and our context. And if you want to help someone that's stuck in a context like this, again, it's about being the hope for them, helping them to see a different way. I'm talking a lot here, guys. You know who I am and where I came from. And one of the questions I get a lot is, how the heck did you go from here to here? Like, you started out like a religious, Bible-thumping, fundamentalist, sexist, racist, homophobe, and now you're here. Like, what the heck, Rob? How does that happen? One way that it happened, kid you not, was 3 years of watching comedy nights at the local bar. Because I went down to the bar because I was writing sermons. I was a preacher. I was writing sermons and I wanted them to be effective. Wanted them to connect with people where they really were. And I wanted inspiration from people who were funny. I wanted to be funny. So I went down and they would yell at me. They're like, are you stealing my jokes? I'm not stealing your jokes. I'm just trying not to suck. So I'm like writing stuff down and I'm listening. And the thing that I noticed was that these guys and girls, these human beings who were wickedly sharp and funny, intelligent, had a deep moral center, and they were all of them atheists. All of them. How is that possible? If what I was taught is true, they should have been miserable and lost. They should have been completely unaware of morality, because morality is grounded on the Bible, and if you take out your firm foundation, you're just, whatever happens is fine. But that's not how they were. They were the ones seeing this stuff that these people were ignoring. That's why it was hilarious, because they saw what was really happening. Being around that for 3 years broke my mind. I couldn't pretend anymore like this was the only way. That's one example of 1,000 ways that 1,000 different people helped me shift. And they didn't do it by yelling at me. They did it by living in front of me. We'll close with a quote from my favorite poet, Shel Silverstein. Listen to the mustn'ts, child. Listen to the don'ts. Listen to the shouldn'ts, the impossibles, the won'ts. Listen to the never-haves. Then listen close to me. Anything can happen, child. Anything can be.